Okay, well, I guess it's a good thing that I actually found the parking space on this campus this morning, which is a non-trivial matter, as you must know. Hi, Tony, how are you?
That was Katie's spot.
That was Katie's spot, right. Well, I'll catch hell later. So what I'd like to do is discuss ekbarata cosmology. As many of you know, that's a new approach to early universe cosmology at the Big Bang and before it. These remarks will apply both to string theory and M-theory, but I'll apply them to M-theory since that's just personally what I'm more familiar with, and I'll just stay with that in this talk. But all these ideas are generic, and they occur in all kinds of brain models, whether they're strings or M-theory. The basic idea here, I think, is basically simple. If we look at the universe the way it is now, it's expanding, so let's reverse time and watch the universe contract. And let's go back toward the Big Bang. And as you contract, matter gets closer and closer and hotter, curvatures get larger and larger. And as you begin to approach the Big Bang, you're going to start having all these dimensional quantities start approaching the Planck scale. The basic idea here is that at the Planck scale, or as you approach the Planck scale, you expect physics to change rather radically. You don't expect quantum field theory any longer to hold. You expect something to replace it. And most theorists and physicists for the last 15 or 20 years feel that string theory or M theory or something like that will in fact be what happens. The remarkable thing about those theories is that they have to live in higher dimensions. String theory in 10 dimensions, M theory in 11 dimensions. So as this four-dimensional universe of ours gets smaller and smaller and smaller and contracts toward the Big Bang, you expect higher dimensions to have to open up. And that is the place where ekbarata cosmology begins. What we want to do is to ask, well, if that were to happen, and if you have higher dimensions and you open up into these brain worlds, then what would cosmology be like? So with that being said, let me discuss the basics of this kind of brain world physics, and then at the end of the talk, I'll try to do some cosmology with it. So of course, I don't have much time, so this is all going to be amazingly brief, but I'll try to hit the main points. Is there a pointer here? I want to start with M theory. Great, yeah, can I reach anywhere with this? Yeah, thank you, Katie. I want to start with M theory. That's a theory in 11 dimensions, but it's not just flat space or even curved 11-dimensional space. There's non-perturbative phenomena that we know all about these days. These things, if you like, are just solitonic behavior. They are not non-diffusing brains. There is a nine-brain, which is a 10-dimensional surface, a two-brain, a membrane, which is a three-dimensional surface, a five-brain, which is a six-dimensional surface. And we want to get down to four dimensions in the world that we see. So I'm going to compactify this world on a Calabi-Yau threefold. That's just a six-dimensional smooth manifold of a specific type in order to allow us to preserve supersymmetry that we want in n equals 1 supersymmetry. And in fact, all of the configurations that I show of the brains here are all n equals 1 supersymmetry preserving type. We'll take the radius of curvature to be the inverse Planck scale, so that when this thing curls up on a Calabi-Yau, that's incredibly small, but it's the kind of thing that will get stimulated as you start to approach the Big Bang. So what happens to all of these solitons and things as you curl up on this Calabi-Yau? Well, what happens is that the nine brain turns into Minkowski space, flat Minkowski space, known as a three brain, times the Calabi-Yau threefold. That's cartoon attempts to show that. The five brain, two of the dimensions of the five brain can wrap on a complex curve or a real two surface inside of the Calabi-Yau. This has to be a special curve called a holomorphic curve to preserve supersymmetry. And you again end up with Minkowski space preserving n equals 1 supersymmetry. That's a second object that can occur. And the last one is the membrane. Two dimensions of the membrane can wrap around the curve, leaving a one-dimensional surface sticking out. And I'll discuss this. This is very important for the dynamics, and I'll discuss this when I get there. Well, we want to discuss real cosmology here. This is not meant to be merely a toy model. And to discuss cosmology, we have to get somewhere near the real world. And my claim is, the claim of my colleagues, is that you can get very close to a standard-like model representing our world this way. I don't have the time to even begin the details here, but let me just show you what happens. We're going to pick specific kinds of Calabi-Yau spaces that have holes in them, non-trivial homotopy. There will be gauge fields that live, that have a vacuum solution of the Yang-Mills equations that live on these Calabi-Yau spaces. They don't have to be the full E8 group of M-theory. They can be some subset of it, group G. These will be called G-instantons. When you have such an instanton, it then breaks the E8 group in Minkowski space down to some grand unified theory, which is some smaller group. Furthermore, because there are holes in this manifold, you can wrap further gauge fields around them, which are topologically non-trivial. These are called Wilson lines, and if you wrap Wilson lines around it, you will then break the gut theory down to the standard model. So living in this five-dimensional M theory is this brain, and in the four-dimensional extension of that brain, you have something very much like the standard model. So for example, a little bit for the experts here, one can choose what's called torus-fibered Calabi-Yaus. We've recently shown you can pick these to have a Z2 cross Z2 homotopy, certain number of holes in them. I can pick the background Yang-Mills field to have a structure group SU4. That will produce an SO10 gut in low dimensions, which is a reasonable grand unified theory. I can then break that to the standard model by applying Z2 cross Z2 Wilson lines. So I'll get down to the standard model gauge group. I will be able to adjust this so it has three families. There'll be a Higgs, and it'll also have suppressed nucleon decay because it comes through this SO10 route, and it can be arranged in that way, and so on and so on. So one has reasonable representation of the world as we know it. So the conclusion of this is that our observed four-dimensional universe in which we're trying to do cosmology may well be a three-brain in some five-dimensional compactified M theory. And we're all astronomers and physicists here, and we have all looked up into the night sky and asked, are we alone? And there's an answer here which is a little bit surprising. The answer is we are not alone, but the other entities and objects of the world may not be in our four-dimensional space, but actually in an internal five-dimensional space of M theory. So what are such objects? Well, you could have, for instance, another one of these nine brains wrapped on a Calabi-Yau, but it'll have a different instanton, a different Wilson line, so it'll break E8 down eventually to some grand unified group and then a smaller group. These could be completely different, and we'll just call any other such thing a hidden brain. It won't be our world, it'll just be some other guy living out there. So for example, I don't have to put any instanton on this thing at all, or a Wilson line, in which case the E8 is unbroken, so we could have some E8 gauge field floating around in space. There's more exotic aliens out there. We can take a five-brain, wrap it on a holomorphic curve. This has nothing to do with either Wilson lines or instantons, since it's inside the bulk space. However, these world sheets have a U1, the five-brain has a U1 anti-symmetric tensor multiplet associated with it. And when it is so wrapped, it turns into a U1 abelian gauge theory, plus lots of scalars. And in fact, you can even have really exotic matter living on it. I think that does have cosmological implications, which have just barely been discussed in the literature. And I won't discuss it here. So you can have wrapped five brains as the other alien. In order to make these theories consistent, you have to do a number of things. For instance, you have to make sure they're anomaly-free, and this leads to some certain patterns. The minimal pattern, the minimal vacuum that you can get, consists in this five-dimensional space of two of these brains, of these wrapped nine brains, one of them being our world. Here's where we live, floating in the five dimensions. And then at the other end of the five dimensions will be a single hidden brain. Let's just say it's got an E8 gauge group on it. However, things can be, interestingly, more complicated than this. You can have non-perturbative behavior. so that you'll have our world floating here in five dimensions, the other end of the world over here, and then you can have these wrapped five brains inside, which for the moment they're stationary and just sitting there. There can be more than one, but in a moment I'll show you that they must move. And this whole set of ideas here originally started by Hrjav and Witten and brought down to five dimensions by myself and colleagues, Waldrum and Lucas. It goes under the name of heterotic M theory. Now, a little bit like Galileo discussing the Earth going around the Sun, the brains do move, and they have to move. There's a dynamical reason for this, and that has to do with that other brain, the membrane, which I haven't discussed yet. What happens is, and I'll discuss this within the context of an observable brain and a wrapped five brain, though all my comments will go through if they were hidden brains as well, is that this particular membrane can wrap itself around a holomorphic curve and go all the way across and wrap itself around the curve at the observable brain. That's what it does to preserve supersymmetry. But when it does that, it produces a spring. And the spring either pushes things apart or pulls them together, but it produces dynamics no matter what you do. So these brains are going to move. In order to describe the motion, you have to give the degrees of freedom, which are called moduli in this case. One of the moduli is obvious. It's the distance between these brains. We'll call that y. But there are other moduli involved which are very interesting. For instance, let's look at our real world here and look at the Calabi-Yau. Here's this curve C. There is an instanton here. We can ask about the restriction of that instanton to that curve. And that has a certain degrees of freedom that you can move without any costing you any energy. These things are called G instanton moduli. I'm going to assume that there's N of them here. Recent work we've done at Penn, we can completely categorize all of these things. These also are involved here, not only the distance, but also the moduli of the G instanton restricted to the curve. So that's what the dynamics is going to depend on. We've recently been able to exactly compute the superpotentials for all of this, much to our surprise. It's a pure algebraic geometry problem which can be solved. So here's the superpotential. This arises from non-perturbatively because you have these membranes being exchanged here. You find that it's exponentially decaying in modulus y, but it has a coefficient in front of it which depends on the determinant of some chiral Dirac operator restricted to this curve. And we can compute that exactly for many, many cases, and we find that we get a homogeneous polynomial. It's a complicated story which I can't give you here, but it depends explicitly on the moduli of the curve, the moduli of the vector bundle associated with the curve. So you can compute stuff here. This is not something we make up. And you, if you know the Kähler potential, and we know a lot about the Kähler potential, though we haven't completely nailed that down yet, we know much about it. If you put the two together, you can give the potential energy for this system. And I don't have time to discuss the details here. You wouldn't want to see them anyway. But there are two typical patterns that you can find arising out of this. First one I'll refer to as a small instanton phase transition pattern. When the brains are separated, this in this region, separated by distance y, which runs from here to there, then in fact you can find that you get a negative decaying exponential of that form. So the brains are going to be slowly, very slowly brought together under that force. When they get to the middle, they hit, but then this modulus disappears and it's replaced by these bundle moduli, and we can now compute their potential. And for example, you can match them on and find that it rises and then goes to some stable vacuum, stable minimum, with, let us say, zero cosmological constant. Well, what that means is, and this is where the cosmology begins, these things can come together. It started late, Katie. And these things can come together and they can hit. And when they hit, this will be our big bang. They hit a stable minimum. They will stick together. They will heat up and they will start to expand. And that will be the ekparotic collision. you can, by looking at other theories and other regions of parameter space, have a different situation where after they hit and they have a collision, the Big Bang, you roll up the potential and down the potential and back out, so you have a bounce and the membrane rolls off again. It is not impossible, though we haven't quite proven this yet, that if we go back to case A, that we can find that the minimum has non-zero cosmological constant. That's very dependent on the Kaler potential, which we're not entirely sure of yet. If that would be possible, there may be an explanation here in terms of this non-perturbative M-theory behavior of how you get a positive cosmological constant in the late universe. But I don't want to claim that yet, but we certainly can find things that look a lot like that. So to end the talk very quickly, I want to discuss the, go directly to cosmology and discuss one of the most important things that such a scenario would have to show, which is the fluctuation spectrum. As these brains are coming together prior to the collision, they're not completely flat. In fact, one of them, well, in fact, could both wiggle relative to each other. So there's the wiggle. So this modulus Y breaks into a center of mass piece, if you like, plus a fluctuation piece, which can wiggle as you move in three-dimensional space. The center of mass part satisfies an equation of motion of this sort. We'll take the constant to be near zero to solve this. This coefficient here, which you'll see again, is the warp factor. It tells you how the geometry changes as you move across the space. Take the fluctuations, Fourier analyze them, then multiply the Fourier component by this d0, by the warp factor. You get a very nice equation, which is just the standard type of fluctuation equation. X is given by this quantity. And this stuff that occurs in here, which we'll all recognize as cosmologists, let's say, in inflationary theories, in this case, it simply turns out to be dependent on derivatives of the potential. So if we choose a typical kind of potential when the brains are separated, we might look something like this, decaying exponential. As I said, this defines the coefficients, which are both positive, V and M are both positive. Then you find that this particular term to leading order looks like 2 times these factors. That's nice because if there was exactly 2, you would have an exactly scale invariant spectrum. Therefore, we get very close in these models to a scale invariant spectrum if M D0 is greater than 1, much greater than 1, and that's easily arranged without any trouble at all. So in fact, it's trying very hard to be near 2, and so you get a very natural scale invariant type spectrum. If you want to look at a little more detail, you can look at the spectral index. We find it's given by 1, which would be scale invariant, plus this factor where d of k is d of 0, evaluated at the time in which a wavelength of order 1 over k would cross the horizon. And that's a calculation you have to do. You plug it all in, you get a mess, but the end result is that d of k looks like a log of 1 over k. So at least a year ago, these were basically the experimental bounds on the index. They're getting better and better, and that's very important, and I guess I'd point that out to experimentalists here, that this really does matter in these theories very much. Over the range of interest, we can easily satisfy this if mdk is greater than 20, which is something that brings us close to a generic scale invariant spectrum, fits us inside this range, and is easily satisfied in Ekparada cosmology. The physics of this is, however, that if you look for smaller wavelengths, that's larger k, then dk gets smaller, then the index gets larger, which tells us that we have more power in the blue side of the spectrum. So this is a blue spectrum. And that's a natural prediction of what happens when brains moving in a warped background are coming together. You tend to get a blue spectrum. So what the experimentalists would look for as we begin to nail down the spectral index to within a percent or 2 or 3 is to see whether there is a shift toward a blue spectrum. If I say that inflation theories tend to give a red spectrum, Andre will raise his hand and say it can give both, and that's true. But so this is not a smoking gun. But it would be very interesting if one found the blue spectrum here. The bottom line of all of this is that prior to collision, a moving brain has a nearly scale invariant blue spectrum, and there's no inflation going on here at all. So it is possible to get a scale invariant type spectrum from pure brain physics. So to conclude the talk, let me just go back to where I left off in the introduction and just say what we expect to have happen. As you approach the Planck scale, things get hotter and hotter, denser and denser, more and more curved. And as you get to the Planck scale, what we think would happen based on this kind of physics is that the dimensionality of space begins to open up. It initially opens up into five-dimensional space. Our world as we know it goes stone cold, and all of that immense energy and temperature goes into a coherent mode, and it gives off a coherent brain into the fifth-dimensional space, which then rolls away from us. That's where the energy goes. To discuss cosmology, let's reverse time. We start off in a pre-world before the Big Bang, and we have a brain that will become our own, and some internal brains in the internal space of M-theory. These brains come together and they collide with enormous energy at some given time. And when they collide, they either bounce or they stick together, and that energy or a fraction of the energy is converted to heating up. The brain begins to expand, and this fluctuation spectrum, we hope, would be imprinted on that matter and then seed large-scale structure. Now, there are people in this audience who very correctly, rightly so, pointed out that it's a very intricate thing as to whether these fluctuations go through a bounce or go through a small instanton transition. And these are things that many people, including myself, are looking at this time. And it would be very nice to know if, in detail, these ideas really work the way we think. But right now, I'm optimistic about this. I think it's a matter of understanding various aspects of string theory and M-theory better. And when we do, we'll be able to answer a lot of questions of early universe cosmology from first principles. So no more just a big bang out of nothing. Possible pre-world of string theory and M-theory. There's a collision. That's the big bang. And then expansion takes place from there. Thank you. That's very, well, yes. Well, first of all, let me just say that I thought I was exquisitely careful to say that everything I said was prior to the collision, and that the difficulty is at the bounce. And I just said that carefully, so I agree with you that there's a difficulty going through the bounce. Well, I agree with the problem at the bounce. We disagree with a lot of details with you, but it is absolutely true that we do not understand the details of the bounce. If there's a pure bounce, we don't know much about the dynamical solutions of string theory, even classically, let alone string corrected, though that we expect the string corrections to help. So that's a very relevant issue. And if it's a small instanton transition, it's the same problem, because as these things get close, they start having tensionless strings, and there's all kinds of extra fields. And one simply has to understand that. However, your remarks, I think, are also premature, because they do not take into account the very intricate structure of what happens at collision, which is just now beginning to be understood. For instance, all of these moduli and their dynamics is something that's only a few months old. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, that's probably Andre's question. So. Well, he has so many. He has so many that I don't know which one. Which one? Yeah, well, what happens here, the horizon problem is not a difficult issue here because, yeah, get to you, Andre, don't worry. What happens in inflation, in a very short period of time, you get exponential expansion, and this blows things out to large sizes. In ekparotic theory, it's exactly the reverse. You have these very, very small non-perturbative potentials, exponential potentials. So it takes an exponentially long time for these to come together because the force is so weak. And therefore, the normal particle potential grows and grows and grows exponentially large because the time takes exponentially long for the collision. So at the time of collision, you have a very, very large particle horizon, and that solves the horizon problem.
My attitude was different one, and that is, if you assume that you produce density perturbations by implanting the instability, then the same mechanism is implanting also any minuscule small inhomogeneity on the initial grade. And therefore, when we started studying this, we found that in order to explain present homogeneity of the universe, you must have regional grades just absolutely homogeneous up to about
I mean, prior to when they start to move toward each other, right?
Instead of explaining the homogeneity of our universe, must postulate with accuracy much greater than it is.
Yeah, well, let me point out that and many of your comments are really quite welcome to us and are often dead on the mark. As I told you in Oxford, I personally, as a particle theorist, don't worry so much about this problem because I'm not sure that it's in the realm of science to discuss these initial conditions. I actually take the position myself that if we discover supersymmetry at CERN, that we are experimentally very close to exact supersymmetry, let's say it's at a few hundred GeV, and therefore we know that these brains, if we're talking about brain physics, are flat and parallel. God knows why. But be that as it may, yes, you are right. I don't know how to give a dynamical reason why these brains are flat to that desired order of accuracy. And that's a very valid point.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.